morning. This is the KBOO Morning News for Thursday, February 16th, 2006. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Carlos Chavez.
Coming up, a Washington County judge has ended the biggest immigration fraud case in Oregon's history. The United Nations says that Guantanamo Bay must be shut down immediately because the prison is a threat to international law. And in Haiti, René Préval has been declared the winner in the recent presidential election. Portland area weather, sunny and cold, slight chance of snow showers in the Cascades later in the day, highs in the 40s tonight, mostly cloudy and cold, temperatures in the upper teens and 20s.
Washington County judge ended the biggest immigration fraud case in Oregon history this week by finding two alleged masterminds not guilty of helping thousands of non-residents get driver's licenses. Circuit Judge Michael McGilligott said there was not enough evidence to link Fabio Alberto Robledo to a scheme that brought illegal immigrants by the vanload to La Unica driver test school he ran in Beaverton with his brother Sergio Antonio Robledo. However, McGilligott did not go easy on the Robledo's operations. In announcing the verdicts, McGilligott said, "Clearly crimes were being committed. People were being brought up here from California, up here from Nevada, and out here from New York for the sole purpose of getting an Oregon driver's license that they were not entitled to." Eight people, including Miguel Robledo's daughter, pleaded guilty to racketeering and forgery charges involving the third-party testing companies run by brothers under contract from Oregon Driver and Motor Vehicle Services. This from the Oregonian.
Portland Parks and Recreation Bureau officials say 10 to 20 maples and fir trees have been felled, most likely to enhance views, inside Markham Nature Park near Portland's Council Crest. Parks managers are upset. They say that unauthorized cutting seems to be happening more often in the park and beyond for reasons that range from building homes to perfecting views. In the case of this recent damage, officials hold open the chance for criminal action if they can find the cutter. Parks officials say it can be hard to find and prosecute those not spotted in the act. Police have been asked to investigate. The trees, mostly native big leaf maples, and some of them are 60 to 80 feet tall, were felled with a total loss in value from $10,000 to $25,000. Two Douglas firs that were cut stood close to 100 feet tall. The cutter probably used a chainsaw. The job seemed done quickly and sloppily. Timber was found torn and ripped, and stands of severed stumps. This from the Oregonian.
Despite spending nearly $350,000 and racking up the support of the Portland Business Alliance, the effort to kill campaign financing appears to have failed to make the May ballot. This from the Oregonian. It looked as though the First Things First committee had enough signatures to qualify, but based on a random sample conducted by the county elections officials, the group collected far too many duplicates and triplicates. County elections officers found so many repeats that repeal organizers said they need to investigate why so many people would have signed multiple times. Purposely, signing twice is a felony. Portland City Council voted last spring to offer taxpayer money to political candidates who agreed to limit their spending. Candidates in council races, for example, can receive $150,000 in the primary if they collect $5 contributions from 1,000 Portlanders. Commissioner Eric Sten and Auditor Gray Blackmer sponsored the reforms.
The president's science advisor yesterday pledged to Representative David Wu that he would look into the government's suspension of funding for an Oregon State University study that undercut the Bush administration's position on logging after wildfires. John Marburger, science advisor to the president and director of the Office of Science and Technology Policy, said he would report back to Congress on the OSU case. Wu, a Portland Democrat, called the OSU episode truly, truly troubling during a meeting of the House Committee on Science where Marburger was testifying. The U.S. Bureau of Land Management suspended funding for the study. Earth scientists from OSU's College of Forestry and the U.S. Forest Service reported that logging sets back recovery of burned forests. The scientists had studied lands burned by the 2002 Biscuit Fire and published their results in the journal Science. The BLM said the scientists' mention of a bill in Congress to speed logging of burnt forests appeared to violate rules against lobbying, and they said they had failed to notify the BLM before publishing the results. But lawmakers criticized the move, and the BLM quickly restored the money about a week later. Wu said the Bureau of Land Management had acted based on trumped-up charges. He said that though the BLM reinstituted the funds, the effects linger. This from the Oregonian.
KBOO's Doug Guidi has his report on the Portland Public School funding crisis.
A big question mark is placed on the spreadsheet of the Portland Public Schools 2006-2007 budget. As the forecast for Portland Public Schools continues to look gloomy, two groups continue the fight to protect certain schools from losing any more classes. One of the groups, the Neighborhood Schools Alliance, is out to notify parents and supporters of Portland schools that alternative plans should be considered to support the schools. Their main focus is that the school board arrange a budget that cuts certain programs equally amongst all workers and students in the district. Included in their plan is a 10% pay cut for all employed by the Portland Public Schools. The other group is working closer with the Portland Public Schools to figure out a strategy plan. Cindy Young is from the Neighborhood Schools Alliance. She's concerned the Portland Public Schools will outright close schools and not re-examine a scaled-back school system.
Well, I think that the lack of funding, I mean, of course, it would indicate that there would be more school closures. We feel, as far as we're concerned, they would have closed schools anyway. They have an agenda, and I would say a master list of school closures. They're trying to be more efficient, and they think that closing all the neighborhood schools will make them so. So, yes, I do believe that this will be something they say, that, well, we don't have the money, we have to close neighborhood schools, but I think that was in the works anyway, so I'm not surprised.
The major test for the Portland Public Schools is the reliance on the tax levies, which limped the districts through the last two school years by adding a Multnomah County, known as the I-Tax, on its residents, a tax that's now become very unpopular. Sarah Carlin Ames is communications director at Portland Public Schools. She believes the school budget can work with the help of groups such as HOPE, helping out public education.
Going both as a parent and as a representative of the school district to the HOPE meetings, three or four of them in the last month, and, you know, our COO has been going, and Vicki Phillips and our board chairs have been going. You know, I don't think there is any conflict between HOPE and our school board. And, in fact, we are, you know, tremendously appreciative of their work as, you know, a broad and positive force of parents in our community. And I think that we are doing all we can to support them as they help to develop solutions with us, a credibly strong partnership.
The pressure is great on the school district. How can it satisfy parents of children enrolled in the schools when it's faced with slashing popular programs and receiving feedback from groups like the Neighborhood Schools Alliance? Sarah Carlin Ames feels the Portland Public Schools is doing its best to work with the community.
We are going to manage our way through this and continue to work as hard as we can to provide a world-class education to our kids. And we're going to do everything we can, and this is a school board's firm commitment, to protect our teachers and our school days and protect the experience of those kids in the classroom. Active people pulling for us out there.
However, the Neighborhood Schools Alliance feels the economics of the districts plays a role in the decisions made, such as Jefferson High. In addition to pay cuts, the Neighborhood Schools Alliance has unveiled an idea that they feel in theory is unpopular, but a necessity to keep schools open, cutting a day out of the school week. That choice doesn't work with the Portland Public Schools and other school groups such as HOPE. All groups and parents do agree on the issue of state funding. Salem is not doing enough to fulfill their commitment to schools in Portland. Whatever the outcome of the decisions made by the Portland Public Schools over the 2006-2007 budget, one thing can be determined. Classes will surely be more crowded and money will be tight to function for another year. The Neighborhood Schools Alliance can be reached at its Yahoo group, groups.yahoo.com, group NSA News. And Help Out Public Education can be reached at 503-239-0606.
A clerk's mistake could mean a budget bill President Bush signed isn't technically law. But congressional Republicans said again yesterday that they have no plans to try to fix the problem, even though Alabama attorney Jim Ziegler has filed a lawsuit charging the $39 billion deficit-cutting legislation Bush signed is unconstitutional because the House and Senate failed to pass identical versions. House GOP leaders insist there's no problem. House Majority Whip Roy Blunt said, "I believe that it's law." But Ziegler, Republican activist, said an eighth grader in civics class knows that a bill cannot become law unless the identical bill passes the House and Senate and is signed by the President. The bill, which Bush signed February 8th, tightens rules for Medicaid nursing home eligibility to make it more difficult for those who've transferred their assets to their families or to charities to qualify for Medicaid. Ziegler, who advises the elderly on eligibility for nursing home care under the Medicaid program for the poor and disabled, filed suit Monday in federal court in Mobile, Alabama, naming Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez as a defendant. Justice Department spokesman Charles Miller declined comment on the case. House Democrats accusing GOP leaders of abusing the legislative process have asked for another vote.
Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist said yesterday he will not allow debate on $70 billion in tax cuts unless the bill extends reductions for capital gains and dividends. Lawmakers just sent the bill into final talks. The legislation left over from last year's agenda can reduce taxes for the wealthy as much as $70 billion over 5 years, which much of the House and Senate versions of the bill would preserve expiring tax cuts. The centerpiece of the House bill would extend tax reductions for capital gains and dividends for 2 extra years. They will otherwise disappear at the end of 2008. The Senate bill would omit that extension because Republican Senator Olympia Snowe would not support it. Senate GOP leaders pledged to make sure the final version of the bill preserves tax cuts for investors.
Technology that might have helped to save the trapped miners was shown off on Capitol Hill yesterday. It included text messaging systems and tracking devices that are not widely used in U.S. mines. Lawmakers also got a look at the one-hour oxygen packs miners do rely on. There was broad agreement that the government ought to require operators to store extra oxygen in mines or outfit miners with longer-lasting packs. The Mine Safety and Health Administration did not participate in yesterday's hearing. Nonetheless, it has announced a temporary emergency rule that would require coal mine operators to provide miners with extra air packs. Several manufacturers of the safety equipment said there ought to be regulations clarifying what new technology should be used. They also said more money should be spent on research and development. Bruce Watsman, the top safety expert at the National Mining Association, said his trade group wants the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health to boost its spending on research and development of mine safety equipment. Watsman says the roughly $30 million the agency spends annually on the effort is not enough.
Senator Russell Feingold dropped his effort yesterday to block the USA Patriot Act. This appears a path for Senate debate. But he promised to try to add new protections for civil liberties during proceedings later this month. Feingold said protracted talks with the White House over the law's protections for civil liberties produced only a fig leaf to cover weaknesses that leave people vulnerable to government intrusion. Feingold did not say what his amendments would propose as Congress raced to renew the Act's 16 provisions set to expire March 10th. But any attempt to change the legislation would face an uphill battle, according to Majority Leader Bill Frist. Feingold had plenty of company in wanting the 2001 terrorism law to contain more curbs on the government's power to investigate people. The bill's sponsor, Arlen Specter, agreed that the legislation before the Senate contains few new protections over those adopted in a failed House-Senate accord last year.
Pre-9/11 intelligence conducted by a secret military unit identified terrorist ringleader Mohammed Atta 13 different times. During a Capitol Hill news conference, Representative Kurt Weldon said the unit, codenamed Able Danger, also identified a problem in Yemen 2 weeks before the attack on the USS Cole. It knew the problem was tied to the port of Aden and involved a U.S. platform, but the ship commander was not made aware of it. Weldon would not say who provided evidence of such intelligence. Since August, Weldon, vice chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, has pushed Congress and the Pentagon to investigate the workings of Able Danger. Able Danger used data mining to identify links that might indicate the workings of terrorists. If Weldon is correct, it could change the timeline for when government officials first became aware of Atta's links to Al-Qaeda. Former members of the September 11th Commission have dismissed Weldon's findings.
New York State had sued the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency for failing to divulge information about the levels of toxins that paint manufacturers are allowing to release into the air. State Attorney General Elliot Spitzer called the information critical to the state's ability to enforce environmental laws and announced yesterday he was suing Washington under the Federal Freedom of Information Act and the Clean Air Act. The dispute stems from an EPA law regulating the amount of volatile organic compounds that can be used in certain paints, stains, and varnishes that contribute to smog, which in turn may harm human and plant life, the statement said. The law allows paint manufacturers to exceed limits if they pay a fee to the EPA. The pay-to-spray fees range from hundreds of dollars a year to more than $5 million dollars paid by the Sherwin-Williams company. EPA officials were not immediately available for comment.
Catherine Armstrong, whose family owns the ranch where Vice President Dick Cheney accidentally shot a hunting partner, is a registered lobbyist who's been paid to lobby the White House, according to MSNBC. Armstrong told NBC News in a telephone interview that she's never directly lobbied Cheney as far as she remembers. Armstrong was playing host to Cheney and to attorney Harry Whittington at a 50,000-acre spread 60 miles south of Corpus Christi when Cheney accidentally shot Whittington. The White House did not immediately release news of the incident. Armstrong, though, was paid $160,000 in 2004 by the powerful legal firm Baker Botts to lobby the White House. The records indicate she was paid the money after she communicated with the White House on behalf of Baker Botts' clients. Records indicate that early in 2005, she ended her dealings with Baker Botts.
According to the Washington Post, Congress appeared ready to launch an investigation into the Bush administration's warrantless domestic surveillance program last week. But an all-out White House lobbying campaign has dramatically slowed the effort and may kill it. The Senate Intelligence Committee is scheduled to vote today on a Democratic-sponsored motion to start an inquiry into the recently revealed program in which the National Security Agency eavesdrops on an undisclosed number of phone calls and emails involving U.S. residents without obtaining warrants from a secret court. Two committee Democrats said the panel was clearly leaning in favor of the motion last week, but now is closely divided and possibly inclined against it. They attributed the shift to last week's closed briefings given to wavering GOP senators by officials, including Vice President Dick Cheney. Lawmakers cite senators such as Olympia Snow to illustrate the administration's success in cooling congressional zeal for an investigation. On December 20th, she was among two Republicans and two Democrats who signed a letter expressing our profound concern about recent revelations that the United States government may have engaged in domestic electronic surveillance. In an interview yesterday, Snow said, "I'm not sure it's going to be essential or necessary to conduct an inquiry if we can address the legislative standpoint that would provide oversight of the surveillance program."
The unmasking of covert CIA officer Valerie Plame Wilson by White House officials in 2003 caused significant damage to U.S. national security and its ability to counter nuclear proliferation abroad. According to current and former intelligence officials, Plame Wilson was part of an operation tracking distribution and acquisition of weapons of mass destruction technology to and from Iran. Speaking under strict confidentiality, intelligence officials revealed heretofore unreported elements of Plame's work. Their accounts suggest that Plame's outing was more serious than has previously been reported and carries grave implications for U.S. national security and its ability to monitor Iran's burgeoning nuclear program. Many have speculated that Plame was involved in monitoring the nuclear proliferation black market, specifically the proliferation activities of Pakistan's nuclear father, A.Q. Khan. But intelligence sources say that her team provided only minimal support in that area, focusing almost entirely on Iran. Intelligence sources would not identify the specifics of Plame's work. They did, however, tell Raw Story that her outing resulted in severe damage to her team and significantly hampered the CIA's ability to monitor nuclear proliferation. Plame's team, they added, would have come in contact with A.Q. Khan's network in the course of her work on Iran.
Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice said the Bush administration will, quote, walk a fine line in seeking punitive international sanctions against Iran's Islamic government over its disputed nuclear program. Rice detailed a two-track approach to Iran, concerted international pressure to deter Tehran from building a bomb, and a newly robust attempt to see democratic change inside the country with a $75 million propaganda campaign. Rice got a mixed reception from the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. She ran into tough questions from lawmakers of both parties about Iran, Iraq, and the Palestinians. On Iraq, the panel's top Democrat countered Rice's optimism about political unity among Iraq's squabbling ethnic groups. Under questioning from both Democratic and Republican senators, frustrated with Bush administration policies in the Middle East trouble spots, Rice acknowledged that the nations trying to keep Iran from building a bomb had divergent views over what to do next. Rice said the United States is examining the ramifications of the full range of potential sanctions the Security Council could levy, but signaled that any initial steps will be small. That is a tactic acknowledgement that the Bush administration would probably lose support from Iranian allies, Russia and China, and perhaps other nations if it sought tougher action now.
Authorities are investigating attacks on Detroit-area Muslims. Today's Detroit News says incidents include an assault on a cleric who was hit with a shovel. There are also reports that a group of youths entered a mosque Sunday and took shoes worshippers had left by the door. They then allegedly threw the footwear at the congregants. Representatives of the Council on American Islamic Relations says 15 Muslim merchants in the area have reported being mugged in the past 2 weeks.
René Préval was declared the winner of Haiti's presidential election Thursday under an agreement between the interim government and electoral council, staving off a crisis over last week's disputed vote in the Western Hemisphere's poorest country. With nearly all the votes counted, Préval had been just shy of the 50.1% margin needed to avoid a runoff next month. Under the agreement, some of the 85,000 blank ballots cast in the February 7th election were subtracted from the total number of votes counted, giving Préval a majority, said Michael Brunache, chief of cabinet for interim president Boniface Alexandre. Haitians celebrated in the street yesterday as word of Préval's win spread. The agreement came during a late-night meeting of government and election officials in the Electoral Council offices. On Tuesday, Haitian TV reported the discovery of ballots discarded in a garbage dump near the capital. Reporters saw thousands of ballots, some marked for Préval, deep in the dump, along with a vote tally sheet and four bags meant to carry returns from the election. The discovery troubled UN officials because the bags were not supposed to be thrown out.
According to Al Jazeera, a homemade bomb has killed four children on their way to school in Baghdad today. Relatives say three girls and a boy were walking to school when they were killed. At least 19 other people, including six police officers, died in car bombings and shootings across the Iraqi capital. The violence took place as Iraqi leaders are trying to hammer out deals in advance of the formation of the country's next government, which the U.S. sees as its best chance to restore security and reduce its troop numbers in the country. At least three car bombs exploded across the capital, targeting police, but killing and injuring ordinary Iraqis as well. A parked car bomb exploded as a police patrol passed, killing four police officers and wounding two civilians. Another car bomb blast killed two civilians near Baghdad's University of Technology. Five people were wounded, three of them police. A third explosives-rigged vehicle blew up near a petrol station as the Iraqi police patrol passed in downtown Baghdad's Qarada area, wounding five police officers and three more civilians. Also yesterday, gunmen killed three people, including a blacksmith at his Sadia workshop. Another man who opened his door in the southern Dora neighborhood and a civilian driving in western Baghdad's Gaza neighborhood were also killed.
Iraq's Interior Ministry has launched an investigation into claims that a police death squad has been operating in the country, a top official said Thursday. Meanwhile, attacks around the country killed 10 people, including six Iraqis who died in a car bomb in Baghdad. Iraq Prime Minister Ibrahim al-Jafari also condemned the latest images of detainees abused in the U.S.-run Abu Ghraib prison in 2003, but noted that those responsible had already been punished. The investigation into the death squads was announced as police found the bodies of 10 more men who had been shot execution style and dumped in three different areas of Baghdad's predominantly Shiite suburb of Shola. Iraq's deputy interior minister is in charge of domestic intelligence, said the investigation followed U.S. military claims that soldiers had detained 22 Iraqi men wearing police uniforms who were about to kill a Sunni Arab man last month. A U.S. general said American forces had found evidence of a death squad operating in Iraq's interior ministry. The bodies of Sunni Arabs bound and gagged and shot in the head have been turning up in Baghdad for months, fueling allegations of sectarian killings, which Sunni Arab leaders say are often carried out by Shiites in army or police uniforms.
A United Nations report released today says the United States should shut down Guantanamo Bay prison, should either shut down the prison or release all detainees being held there or bring them to trial. The report called on the U.S. government to close down the Guantanamo Bay Detention Center and to refrain from any practice amounting to torture or cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment. The report's findings were based on interviews with former detainees, public documents, media reports, lawyers, and a questionnaire filled out by the U.S. government. The United States is holding about 500 men at the U.S. naval base on the southeastern tip of Cuba. The detainees are accused of having links to Afghanistan's ousted Taliban regime or the Al-Qaeda terror group, though only 10 have been charged since the detention camp opened in January of 2001. The U.S. ambassador to the United Nations offices in Geneva said investigators had taken little account of evidence against the abuse allegations provided by the United States and rejected an invitation to visit Guantanamo. The U.S. Has allowed human rights groups to visit the camp, but they are not allowed to speak directly with the prisoners.
This has been the Cable Morning News for Thursday, February 16th, 2006. Chris Andre edited the news. Cable's volunteer audio engineers edited the tape, and Cable's intrepid reporters contributed local stories. Kathleen Stevenson is the AM News and Public Affairs Director, and Boone Rivas is on the board right now. I'm Carlos Chavez.
And I'm Chris Andre.
We welcome your participation in the newsroom. To volunteer, call us at 503-231-8032, extension 202. Reach us by email at amnews@kbu, or drop by the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. The KBU website, www.kbu.fm. We clear the air at 90.7 FM, 100.7 FM, Corvallis on translator K264AA, 91.9 FM in Hood River on translator K220HR. Be sure to join us at 5 p.m. for a solid hour of solid news on the KBU Evening News. Portland area weather will be sunny and cold. A slight chance of snow showers in the Cascades later in the day. Highs in the 40s. Tonight, mostly cloudy and cold. Temperatures in the upper teens and 20s. Coming up this morning on KBU at 7:30, Joanne Bowman hosts Voices from the Edge Talk Radio, and Julie Sabatier hosts another pilot program of DIY Portland. She'll speak with Tim Calvert, who helped to start the Laughing Horse Bookstore and helped to make City Bikes into a worker-owned collective. They'll discuss sustaining DIY businesses in Portland. At 9:30, Teresa Mitchell hosts Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. And at 10, I'll host the new pilot for the radio program Chicanismo with guest Ramon Ramirez, president of PICUN, to talk about immigration legislation and a new report that was released on Tuesday titled, In Our Own Words, Immigrants' Experiences in the Northwest. We also will have an interview with film producer Moctezuma Esparza. At 10:30, Julie Bernard hosts Art Focus. Her guest will be two local cartoonists along with local artist Daniel DeFord. They'll discuss comics today. And at 11, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez.
Community calendar for Thursday, February 16th. There will be a free talk Friday night, that's tomorrow night, the 17th, by Mike Houck, director of the Urban Green Spaces Institute. The talk entitled, In Livable Cities is Preservation of the Wild, Creating an Ecologically and Socially Just Metropolitan Region, will be held at Portland State University. The event runs from 7 to 9 p.m., again, that's tomorrow night, and it will be held on campus at room 190 at the School of Business of Administration. A bright splotch corn snake wraps around your arm. A contented ferret dozes in your lap. A desert tortoise shows the pattern of a fiberglass repair on its shell. You tell the story behind the rescue while children gather eager to listen. If you love animals and have a desire to teach visitors about them this summer, the Oregon Zoo is looking for 150 high school students to be zoo teens. Students entering 9th through 12th grade this fall may apply now through March 1st for this volunteer program. For more information, call 503-220-2449 or visit the website at www.oregonzoo.org. Volunteers are needed on Saturday, March 18th for the Veg Fest in downtown Portland from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. The shifts are 2.5 hours long. Volunteers get free admission to the Veg Fest. The Northwest Vegetarian Education and Empowerment Group is an all-volunteer nonprofit group in the Portland and Vancouver area and is dedicated to bringing awareness of a vegetarian lifestyle and helping support people in their transition toward making healthier, more sustainable, and compassionate food choices. Activities for the Veg Fest include food sampling, lectures, children activities, and cooking demonstrations. For more information about this volunteer effort, please call 503-224-7380. Once again, a reminder to come celebrate our multicultural community here at KBU Radio. This is happening this Saturday, February 18th, and there will be a special potluck-style open house from 1 to 6 p.m. KBU volunteers and listeners alike are encouraged to participate. Our listeners out there, if you'd like to meet us and take a tour of the station, you are invited. Be sure to bring food from your own cultural heritage to share with others as we celebrate this day together. In addition, KBOO will feature special programming on the air this day, so be sure to tune in, and that programming is running from 12 noon to 9 p.m. If you are a member of a nonprofit or community group and would like to have an upcoming event considered for announcement on this program, please email the KBOO Community Calendar at gmail.com, or you may post your announcement on our website at kboo.fm. You've been listening to the Community Calendar. This is Alicia Olson for KBOO, listener-sponsored community radio in Portland, Hood River, and Corvallis.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Cotton Cloud Futons, a locally owned business featuring futons and mattresses, frames, covers, furnishings, and accessories which can be made with organic and recycled materials. Cotton Cloud is located at 701 Northeast Broadway in Portland. Information at 503-335-0758 or cottoncloudfutons.com.